Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines. From blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome into the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for checking out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or on Google or on our website, 991thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app, powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. A lot to get to on this edition of the Behind the Arc podcast, as we're less than a month away from the start of the college basketball season. Santiago Vescovi, Tennessee's sophomore guard, joined the media for a press conference earlier this week. You'll hear some of his comments about some of his teammates, the newcomers that Tennessee fans have been waiting a while to see, particularly the transfers that Tennessee has that are eligible to play this season. We'll also discuss the latest in what's happening with some of these ESPN planned events for the multi-team events. There's been some reshuffling. How does it affect Tennessee and the rest of the college basketball world? And CBS Sports earlier last week released their updated projections for the SEC season. No surprises for Tennessee, but some interesting things there that you'll see from the CBS Sports staff, but should be a lot of fun as we get into the details. Again, college basketball is just less than a month away. November 25th is coming up less than a month away. We'll get through Halloween this weekend, and then before you know it, it'll be November, and we'll officially be in college basketball season by the end of next month. So really excited to be talking college basketball. Should be a lot of fun to get to be breaking down games, especially with this Tennessee basketball team, and that starts out with Santiago Vescovi, who joined the media earlier this week and talking about his teammates and going back to South America and then coming back and getting to spend some time home and playing with different players and having the opportunity to do all those things. And so it was really cool for Vescovi to kind of see the media obviously finally answering questions about his new hair color. He's gone with the silver, if you haven't seen that yet. So it's been kind of funny him just getting to talk about that, but Vescovi talking about his game and how he's developing as a shooter and a passer. And it's a loaded backcourt, and Vescovi understands that. And so learning how to play off the ball more. And it's going to be a big year for Vescovi, but he is somebody who has been under the radar, I think, in the national landscape in college basketball. Obviously, Tennessee fans and folks around the SEC know very well how talented Vescovi is. When your first career start is the SEC opener against a really talented LSU team, it becomes a little bit more obvious that you're going to be known around the rest of the conference, especially when you go out and put up 6 3-pointers in your first SEC game. And John Rothstein of CBS Sports tweeted out just yesterday on Wednesday, the least talked about storyline right now in the SEC, Santiago Vescovi should be in much better shape to start the season for Tennessee. He joined the Vols midseason last December. And Tennessee fans all know this. Vescovi came in, was here for less than a week, and started playing 30 minutes in a SEC game against LSU and scored 18 points and immediately became a key factor in what Tennessee did offensively. And Barnes obviously is going to continue to critique his players throughout the course of their development, regardless of what's happening. But he was critical of Vescovi at times, wanted him to get up the floor more, wanted to push that tempo more. And Tennessee just didn't have the pieces with guys that were used to running the offense the way that Rick Barnes wanted them to. Josiah Jordan-James injured during the preseason, played through injury most of the year, was not expecting to take on the role that he had to due to Jordan Bound and Lamonte Turner not being the pieces that they were thought to be. Turner, of course, having to have season-ending shoulder surgery in December before the SEC portion of the season started, and then Jordan Bowden just in a slump and not playing well for the majority of the year. So a lot of pressure fell on Vescovi and Josiah Jordan-James to have to do a lot for that offense. So I think for Tennessee, having Vescovi to have a full offseason going through this program, the expectations are going to be a lot higher. And sometimes this does not always work out. I think it will for Vescovi, since he's obviously had a lot of game reps. He's been able to go in and just play. The expectations are going to be a little bit different, because now the expectation is so much higher with him. Okay, now you know the system. You're expected to know the system. It's not a matter of just going out and playing like you have nothing to lose, because now you know more. And with Rick Barnes, he gets his team coached up to play and play at a high level. And we have seen that twice out of the last three seasons with this Tennessee basketball team. Not expected to do much three seasons ago. Ended up winning a share of the SEC regular season title. Expected to do a lot 2 years ago, and they did a lot. Stayed in the top six the entire season. Ranked number one for a month, and then made the Sweet 16. Not expected to do a lot last year, and Tennessee didn't. But they still picked up some good wins against Florida and Kentucky late in the SEC schedule. So Santiago Vescovi is going to be a big piece of that Tennessee offense, going to be a big piece of what Tennessee does defensively. This could be one of the best defensive teams in college basketball. And Vescovi, talking about that depth that you've heard so much about throughout the course of the offseason, was asked about Sacred Heart graduate transfer E.J. Anasicki. Of course, his sister, Nikki Anasicki, was a national champion with the Lady Vols under Pat Summitt. And EJ, after averaging a double-double last season, he has looked really good in practice so far. And Vescovi was asked to describe his new teammate, the transfer from Sacred Heart.
He's a unit. Like, you cannot stop him. If he go into the rim, you cannot stop him. Like, I'd rather just move to the side rather than just staying in front of him. Like, he's super strong. He's really good in the, crashing the glass, offensive rebounds. He's really good also, having the ball. He can read the defense. He can make good passes.
A unit. You can't stop him. If he's going to the rim, you can't stop him. Those are some good things that you want to hear from your guard. Now, granted, Vescovi's a little bit more unlikely to stop him, because Vescovi is significantly smaller than Anasicki, and there's going to be some really good big men in the SEC that are going to contest guys like Anasicki, because it's SEC basketball. But you get the point of what Vescovi's saying. Really solid on the glass, really solid on defense, really solid with the ball in his hands, which describes who Anasicki was at Sacred Heart. Of course, you can go back and listen in previous episodes of the podcast to the interview I had with Sacred Heart head basketball coach Anthony Latina, who, of course, coached Anasicki, recruited him, and had him for the first 3 years of his college basketball career. And that describes everything that you need to know about Anasicki, is his work ethic and how good he is as a scorer and a rebounder. Again, averaged a double-double for the entire course of last season with Sacred Heart. That expectation is not going to be quite the same, but he is going to be expected to come in and be a good support piece. And he's a gym rat, as Latina described him as being. And so he is going to be super strong, like Vescovi was saying. And that's good news for Tennessee, because they were so shallow in depth in the front court. It helps that you have John Fulkerson and Yves Ponce coming back. Those are easily your two starting big men that are going to carry the load in that position. But having Anasicki, having Josiah Jordan-James, if he can morph more into a wing, I think could be really helpful because of his size and athleticism. He's a really, really good athletic player. I think for Tennessee to be able to utilize that a little bit more, to have quicker wings, that is how Tennessee has been able to beat Kentucky so many times in Rick Barnes' tenure, is in times where they've been outsized, they've been more athletic in getting to the glass. So EJ Anasicki being a bigger guy, depending on his speed, depending on his hustle, depending on his work ethic, that's how you outgrit a team like Kentucky. And according to CBS Sports, we'll get more into that later, and from what you've heard me say throughout the entire offseason, it is expected to be Tennessee and Kentucky the entire season in the Southeastern Conference. Santiago Vescovi was also asked about Victor Bailey Jr., the Oregon transfer who sat out last season while going through Tennessee's program, was shooting nearly 40% from three-point range in his last season at Oregon, and is expected to be a really good player for Tennessee. Vescovi was also asked about Bailey, and stop me if you've heard these comments before, but Santiago Vescovi believes that Bailey might be flying under the radar.
I really think that Victor Bailey is, I don't know how to say it in English, but he's definitely a big surprise that not most of the people are going to be aware of, like how good he's playing right now. And I think he's going to be a really big game changer for us.
And that really goes hand in hand with what Josiah Jordan James said earlier in the offseason, that he is going to be the most underestimated talent in college basketball, that he's the best kept secret in college basketball. And now you have two of Tennessee's backcourt players that have been talking about their new guard, Victor Bailey Jr., coming in from Oregon. And it sounds like the expectations are high, not just externally, but internally for that Tennessee backcourt. So Vescovi expected to improve. Victor Bailey expected to add a lot and contribute a lot. The new freshman expected to make a big impact right away, and Josiah Jordan James expected to do some big things after having a bit of an injury plague season in his first year in Rocky Top. So signing of Vescovi, really strong words about the two transfers that Tennessee has on its roster this year, with EJ Anasicki from Sacred Heart and Victor Bailey Jr. from Oregon. Should be a really good backcourt for Tennessee, but they have the options back there. And don't be surprised if you see Rick Barnes tinkering with that lineup throughout the course of the year. CBS Sports, they've got really strong thoughts about Tennessee. Also curious about some of the other picks that they've made within the SEC for the upcoming year. We are less than a month away from college basketball season getting started. It is coming up on November 25th, and we will have the coverage for you right here on the Behind the Arc podcast. We've got more coming up with the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal. Seth Davis of The Athletic is reporting that ESPN's plans to set up an NBA-like bubble for its college basketball events in Orlando have been washed due to ongoing differences between the network and the participating schools regarding the health and safety protocols required for participation. So there has been some disagreement about quarantining athletes and teams regarding COVID-19 testing. And so a lot of events were set to be scheduled and played in Orlando, some with simultaneous events going on at the same time. And the thought was, is that this was going to work and that potentially teams could schedule other games in Orlando that weren't a part of the multi-team events. It does not look like that is going to be the case. And the ESPN network is hoping to salvage two doubleheaders. That's the Champions Classic, which includes Michigan State, Kansas. We've seen Kentucky there in the past. The Jimmy V Classic, which Gonzaga is scheduled to play Tennessee in. So these are some really big events with teams playing one game each. They were scheduled to play in Orlando, and now they're trying to salvage those events. But other events such as the preseason NIT, the Orlando Invitational, the Diamond Head Classic, the Wooden Legacy, the Charleston Classic, and the Myrtle Beach Invitational, all of those events are potentially up in the air. And the Charleston Classic, that affects Tennessee. That was an event that they were going to play in with some other Power Five and mid-major teams. And so it's unfortunate that that's happened. And hopefully we can figure out a way to get some of these other events happening. Now, there are other events that are not owned by ESPN. And so the other multi-team events, such as the Battle for Atlantis, the Maui Invitational, those are still expected to be played. Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Asheville, North Carolina are expected to host those events. So there's and then there's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame too, that typically tries to set up an event. And Matt Norlander of CBS Sports wrote a piece earlier this offseason about the Hall of Fame setting up an event with the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut sometime in December, since there's multiple locker rooms and they could figure out a way to have multiple teams quarantining and safely testing and sanitizing and everything there. So plans are still in place. It seems it's just really hit a roadblock for a lot of these events. Over two dozen teams are now impacted by this. And again, non-conference games, they're not going to be the focal point of trying to make scheduling happen for the upcoming season, but they are important for determining a proper method of accurately depicting how do you correctly seed teams in the NCAA tournament. And for Tennessee, you're hoping that they can get that Gonzaga game because it's such a high profile matchup. You could be talking about two top 10 teams by the time we get to that game. Tennessee, of course, already has Kansas on the schedule, and hopefully these events can be played. The Champions Classic, which is always a great way to kick off the season with two big time matchups, and usually features power conference blue bloods and programs like Michigan State, top five teams, top 10 teams. You don't want to see these events not happen. So hopefully the network can find a way to either find another location or find another way to come to terms with Orlando. But right now it is looking like these events are not going to happen. So the Jimmy V Classic is hopefully still on to be played for Tennessee and Gonzaga. The Charleston Classic looks like it's seriously in jeopardy, which would impact Tennessee's schedule. Right now on utsports.com, the only game that Tennessee has on its schedule is the SEC Big 12 Challenge against Kansas, which is a big game, but Tennessee would like to get closer to the maximum number of games permitted for the upcoming season. CBS Sports, what are they saying about Tennessee? What are they saying about the rest of the league? Be surprised looking back on last season and thinking how bad of a year it was for the SEC. Major improvements expected for the entire conference from top to bottom. We'll talk about that next on the Behind the Arc podcast on the Esports Animal. Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, who does a fantastic job covering college basketball, he pointed some things out about the SEC conference as a whole last year with the basketball season. And I think I forgot about this myself, but there was not a single SEC team that finished in the top 25 last year in the KenPom rankings, I should say. And that really goes to show how down the league was when you consider KenPom's rankings of accuracy and determining the metrics for which teams are going to be towards the top. Of course, Kansas was the number one team in the KenPom rankings at the end of the season, but the highest ranked team in the SEC was Kentucky at number 29. It was just a really down year for the conference. You had Florida at 32, Auburn at 33, and then LSU at 37. So you had four teams in the top 40, but you look at the Big Ten, you had three Big Ten teams in the top 11. You had three Big 12 teams in the top 10. You had a pair of ACC teams in the top 10. You had San Diego State at number 6. You had an American team at number 14 with Houston. So when you get all the way down to the SEC's highest ranked team being in the SEC, and keep in mind, there were six more Big Ten teams ranked 22 through 28 with a Big East team and Butler splitting them. So you had most of the Big Ten conference ahead of the SEC's highest ranked team. And the Big 12 and the Big Ten was great last year, but it just goes to show how bad the SEC was and what a down year it was for the league, which likely means that the SEC would not have had a single team with a top three seed in the NCAA tournament had we ever gotten to the bracket. So, not great. Most analytics had the SEC as the worst Power 5 league in the country, but the conference should be a lot better. Kentucky's got a great recruiting class coming in. Tennessee has a great recruiting class, along with two great transfers that we talked about earlier in this podcast, plus a ton of returning talent coming back, which includes an all-SEC selection in John Fulkerson and the reigning SEC Defensive Player of the Year in Eve Pons. So Gary Parrish has Tennessee, Kentucky, and LSU ranked in his top 25 and one. He's got three others that he says are knocking on the door. That's referring to Alabama, Florida, and Arkansas. I don't know if Arkansas is going to stay there without Isaiah Joe being there, but he believes the SEC should get at least six bids into the 2021 NCAA tournament and possibly more. The next bet after those six teams to me would be Ole Miss. Really good recruiting class. They did a really good job on the transfer market. They've got some talent coming back. And also, how finicky are Florida and Arkansas, with Florida losing some of its talent to the transfer portal and then also just graduating Kerry Blackshear, and Arkansas not having Isaiah Joe? Is that recruiting class and the transfer incoming class going to be enough? Alabama suffered a bad injury with one of its top recruits already suffering a severe Achilles injury. So Nate Oates in his second season, what is he able to accomplish? So those three teams that Parrish has that he claims are knocking on the door, they all have a lot of talent, but they all have serious question marks. And so I could see either any of those three teams ending up being a disappointment. I could see any of those three teams exploding. I think it's less likely for Florida. Mike White has just proven that he's going to underachieve. And after what happened last year, preseason top six ranking in the country, nearly losing to Towson, then getting blown out by Florida State and it becoming very clear that this was just not going to be a very good basketball team and would have made the NCAA tournament by the time we got to that point in the season. But you were looking at an 8 or 9 seed. And I remember Matt Norlander saying, giving his analysis, he said, look, if Florida's getting in, I'm not picking them. I'm not picking them to win the first round. And who could blame him? I think Florida has just done so much to underachieve in the last couple of seasons since that Elite Eight run they made a few years ago. Alabama and Arkansas, I like what the coaches are doing there. I like Nate Oates at Alabama. I like Eric Musselman at Arkansas. Again, Arkansas lost so many close games last year when they lost Isaiah Joe, and they don't have Mason Jones anymore. It's going to be tough to replace those guys with Isaiah Joe electing to stay in the NBA draft. Alabama, good talent coming back. Got some really good news over the course of the offseason with John Petty announcing that he was coming back. Good recruits. Again, the injury news has not been great, but good coaching can get that team to take a step into the NCAA tournament. And then let's see what Kermit Davis does in year three in Oxford. Was not a great season a year ago, but he did get that team to the NCAA tournament the year before in his first season for the Rebels. So Gary Parrish has his SEC preseason player of the year. He thinks it's going to be Keontae Johnson at Florida. His SEC preseason coach of the year, Rick Barnes at Tennessee, which is an honor that he has already achieved since coming to Tennessee. What Parrish says about Rick Barnes, it took a few years for Rick Barnes to get things going at Tennessee, but now that he has things going, he really has things going. And there's a chance this season's team could be his best at UT yet. And I write that knowing full well that his 2017-18 team won the SEC and the 2018-19 team made the Sweet 16. These Vols have three former five-star prospects, two of whom project as possible one-and-done players and enough experience to compete at the top of the sport. So while I'm not necessarily predicting that Barnes is about to take Tennessee to its first Final Four in school history, I'm definitely not ruling it out. BJ Boston from Kentucky is his SEC preseason freshman of the year. And then his predicted order of finish, he's got Tennessee at number one. And he says that the Vols unsurprisingly slipped last season. I think that's a fair way to put it. I did not think that Tennessee was going to be a lock to make the NCAA tournament. And at the end of last season, Tennessee was not going to make the NCAA tournament. He has Kentucky at two and LSU at three, Florida at four, Alabama at five, Arkansas at six. He actually has Auburn at seven, South Carolina at eight. He has Ole Miss at nine. And he thought that it was a surprise that Davis got the Rebels to the NCAA tournament in his first season. And they were picked last that year, by the way, and they finished tied for sixth in the league. And he was the SEC Coach of the Year back in 2019. But Ole Miss took a step back last season. It lost a lot of games, struggled, especially on offense. And I think he needs to see a little bit more evidence. And at first, I wasn't certain about it, but I do like what we could see out of Devontae Shuler. And if you get a big year at Devontae Shuler, then maybe Ole Miss takes that step forward. Missouri's at number 10, Texas A&M at number 11. That's really interesting because Texas A&M looked really good towards the end of the season. It was a really impressive year from Buzz Williams in year one. I do think the Aggies need to do a little bit more on the recruiting trail, and it's going to take Williams a little bit more time because the last 2 years they've been a big disappointment after they were a four seed in the NCAA tournament not too long ago. Mississippi State at number 12. Look, you lose Reggie Perry, Robert Woodard, and Nick Weatherspoon. I just don't know how you replace that without an elite recruiting class like Kentucky has. Obviously, Anthony Edwards leaving Georgia does not help a team that was already really bad in SEC play. So Anthony Edwards not being there is certainly not going to help. He's got Vanderbilt at number 14. The panel, which includes Gary Parrish, Matt Norlander, Jerry Palm, Kyle Boone, and David Cobb. David Cobb, of course, has joined the podcast before. Parrish, Palm, and Cobb all have Tennessee winning the SEC. Norlander and Boone have Kentucky. Kentucky and Tennessee are the top two teams for all five panelists. LSU is number three for all of them, except Kyle Boone. Kyle Boone's and we've had Kyle Boone on Saturday Sports Talk before to talk college basketball, does a great job for CBS Sports. His order is really interesting to me. He's got Alabama at three, Auburn at four, Florida at five, LSU at six, and Arkansas at seven. Really, really surprised here because I thought it was kind of obvious that LSU was going to be that number three team. And so for Boone to drop them all the way down to six, my guess is that he is anticipating something to go down with Will Wade, something to go down with the personnel that they have on that roster. But I thought that was really interesting that you are seeing a bit of LSU's overrated reaction from Kyle Boone. So I think it's a really interesting pick, something to keep an eye on, very high on Alabama. It could be a lot of fun. And as for Florida, Florida is in either the four or the five spot for all five panelists. This could be a make it or break it year from Mike White. I don't know what to tell you, but if you're a Florida fan listening to the podcast, I think you know that Mike White's underachieved. It has not gone entirely well in Gainesville. Last season was a monster disappointment, and he needs a bounce back season in a hurry down there in Gainesville to avoid his seat getting any hotter. Thank you for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, Tennessee widely expected to contend, if not win, the SEC championship this year. We are less than a month away from the college basketball season. Be sure to leave a 5-star rating and a review. Hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts for the Behind the Arc podcast. And give me a shout out at Joel Silverberg on Twitter if you have a college basketball question. I would love to get to those on the next edition of the Behind the Arc podcast. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next week on the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.